Amusingly, there are programs that are still in existence nowadays, at least on Unix systems, that come directly from ancestors at SAIL, like Finger, but most of those programs still in use are kind of utilities. Somehow utilities seem to have a longer life than major computational accomplishment kind of programs.
Yeah, Finger did come from SAIL. And I think probably you're right about utilities. The major accomplishments tend to be a bit specialized, and people in a particular field remember them. For example, one of the things that was done rather early at SAIL by a physicist, Tony Hearn, were the symbolic calculations involved in quantum mechanics. And that's probably pretty well forgotten today, since there are different systems available, and Tony Hearn isn't as well known as he was.
The program Finger would be best known to the average person as the means by which Robert T. Morris launched his worm on the internet, the famous first internet worm in, I guess, about 1985. So in some sense, the internet worm was made possible by the work at SAIL.
Oh, well. If you insist.
Well, you can't create features without creating security problems.
I guess that's certainly true. I had always thought that security would be easier than it turned out to be.
In the early days, you didn't have so many malefactors attached to your computer system as you do via the internet.
That's true, but they did play one trick on me. I invented a crypto system for encrypting files. Someone else tinkered with my program so that every time I encrypted a file, it would store in one of his files the name of the file that I'd encrypted and the key that I'd used. As it turned out, I don't really have any secrets. So writing the encryption program was a bit almost of pure science, and I stopped using it after a while.
Tell us, during your trips to campus from the remote power lab, what your experience with the unrest and student activism on campus was like.
I switched from being a leftist to being a rightist around 1968. Well, tell you two experiences that I had. One was I came out of the faculty club, and there was this student, a couple of students in front of the faculty club who were saying, if you faculty support the Vietnam War, why don't you go out and fight? And they had this hand grenade that they offered to sell to a faculty member. So I grabbed the hand grenade and ran off with it. They chased me and begged me to give it back to them and so forth, which I eventually did. And later on, I got a call from the sheriff's department who asked, could I testify that that was a real hand grenade? I said, well, it certainly felt like a real hand grenade, which I'd had experience with when I was in the Army, but it could have been a practice grenade that would have had just a little bit of black powder in it. So I didn't know whether it was a real hand grenade or not. Eventually, they decided that they didn't have a case against these guys, and so I was not ever called upon to testify. Another funny experience that I had was that there was this old philosopher, Sidney Hook, who had been a socialist all his life. He was still a socialist. But after he retired from New York University, he went to the Hoover Institution at Stanford. I came out of the faculty club one day, and there was Hook standing in front of this table arguing with this Trotskyite. And Hook called me over and asked me to confirm what he said about the Bolsheviks having broken up the Russian parliament, rather than the Russian parliament having ceded to them, and I confirmed it. And this young Trotskyite said, if I had known you were Sidney Hook, I wouldn't have spoken to you. there was a lot of excitement in those days.
What motivated your transition from being a leftist to being a rightist?
All the bad things that the Soviet Union had done. And my opinion was that the U.S. was on the right side in Vietnam. So I went in the opposite direction from almost all my colleagues.
It seems that a lot of the residents of the peninsula today are unaware that students occupied and took over Stanford University facilities, that they closed certain buildings down, that the Mid-Peninsula Free University and the Whole Earth Truck Store were in Menlo Park. A lot of that history seems to be forgotten now.
Well, one of the major things, reason why it's forgotten, is due to Nixon, who ended the draft. In those days, before the draft was ended, self-interest, that is, avoiding serving in the armed forces, and political conviction went hand in hand. And nowadays, political conviction has to stand on its own feet.
Whatever happened to the Mid-Peninsula Free University? When did that peter out into nothingness?
It didn't peter out. What happened was that partly it ran out of things to do, but mainly it got taken over by the extreme left, by an organization called Venceremos, started by a Stanford professor, Bruce Franklin. Once they took it over, they took the money and dumped the organization.
In the 60s and 70s, computers weren't an industry the way they are now. There certainly was IBM and Honeywell and a few other companies, but computing was a very small enterprise compared to what it is today. Were students more interested in computing for its own sake and less careerist in the 60s and 70s than they are now? Was there a different atmosphere in computer science then?
Yes, there was a different atmosphere. The opportunity to make vast sums of money, which arose in the 90s, didn't seem to exist then. For example, students were willing to work for the AI lab and to design interfaces while they were still students that later on they could either be hired for vast sums of money or could form companies that could make vast sums of money.